if somebody truly does hit a wall and burn out, let's say as a writer, maybe they weren't meant to be a writer in the first place.
You might know him, David Goggins.
Yeah, oh yeah. I'm not going to write 23 hours a day and sleep one. That's just crazy. The feeling that you're experiencing that sort of tells you don't do it or don't spend so much time on it or don't work so hard on it, that's pure resistance with a capital R. And that's your own self-sabotage. And that tells me that that's what you have to do. I can see it in your face right now.
I asked you for this interview on this chat because I've noticed there are so many people in Poland, not only in Poland, but I met most of the time with Polish people, that they started the journey. For example, they wrote their first book, a second one, a fifth one, a tenth one, then ran like 10 marathons. They post like a million posts on Facebook, Instagram, and so on. They create multiple projects and businesses. But then there's a wall, like in a marathon after 27 kilometers, a wall, like you cannot pass. So I was wondering what kind of tips you could give us to people who actually started the journey. They become pro, but there's a moment when even pro struggles to keep doing the things that he done. Because I noticed that when we get the knowledge, experience, we know how to do shit, then we see, okay, it's boring. Let's find another one, something completely different. So I'm super curious, what do you think about this process?
It's a great question. I've actually been thinking about that recently. The idea of in English of having a practice. Does that What I mean by that is like someone might have a yoga practice, and every day they would do yoga for an hour, or have a meditation practice that they would do, whatever each day. And I look at my own writing as a practice. And one of the things about a practice is it's lifelong. And I think that I don't hit a wall and I don't get bored because there's always I'm continuing to evolve, and if what I'm doing is getting a little stale, then I'll try to take it to a higher level, or to move into some other area that I haven't done before. But I always feel like the goddess, the muse, is giving me a new assignment, one assignment after another, and each one is stretching me and keeping me going. I wonder if somebody truly does hit a wall and burn out, let's say as a writer, maybe they weren't meant to be a writer in the first place, or maybe they just were using writing to get them to a particular goal, and they do need to move on or to switch to some other field, or rejuvenate themselves creatively one way or another. But I think if you're a real dancer or a real filmmaker or a real poet or whatever, you're in it lifelong, and you'll continue to evolve. Willie Nelson, the American singer, is 90 years old. He's still putting out records. He's still touring, and still doing new stuff. So I think that's that. I hope that doesn't happen to me. Let me put it that way. It certainly hasn't happened yet. I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Because I see a lot of people around me who decide, okay, I do want to do again next year, another year in, let's say, in social media. But at the same time, they are pro. They know how to do it. They know how to bring results. They know how to bring audience. Sometimes I feel the same way because I know how to sell online. I know exactly what to do to sell. But at the same time, I'm feeling like, maybe it's a time for something new. And part of me are saying is saying like, but listen, Martin, you've got the skill. But the second part of me is saying it's boring for me. And I'm a bit afraid of the word boring because boring is not the code for a pro, right? you wrote in your book, Turning Pro, that pro is a pro and he knows what to do. But at the same time, I feel it's a time for a twist, for a pivot, for a change. But to change, I have to stop doing things I was doing till now. Am I correct?
I think, you know, you're right. I do think sometimes one really does reach a point of exhaustion in a certain field, right? Or a certain medium that you're using. And I get a little tired of social media too. but I think we just simply need to keep asking ourselves, what's the next step? What am I interested in? You know, how do I need to evolve? What is, because there is always something new. There is always a spin you can put on something, or maybe even a really radical change to something you've never done before. That's a real time for introspection, you know, for talking with somebody you really trust, you know, and really asking yourself, where do I want to go next? What's interesting to me? You know, what scares me? That's another great thing is that I always use is, what am I afraid of? Because that's a place I want to go. You know, I always use that as a guide. I ask myself, what am I afraid to do next? And that's the thing I think I should do. So that's a good question, I think, to ask. You know, a lot of times people in writing, at least, they think they're writers because they wrote a self-help book or they wrote, you know, something that is really easy. But what's the next stage that would still be within the writing world, but would be harder? A memoir, a piece of fiction, you know, something that nobody's ever thought of before. I'm always myself trying to look for what's the next thing that I haven't done before and that I'm afraid of.
I've got a friend. He got a gym. At the beginning, he focused on how gonna help people lose weight. He's very good with this, but he reached the point of like, okay, now I want to work with the pro. So he's trying to pivot from focusing on, you know, fat people to put his focus into athletes or pro, sports pro. And at the same time, he's afraid of, you know, avoiding, skipping that part of helping other, you know, the fat people who lose like 30 kilograms fat. And he's like, I'm afraid. So that's the question for you, like, does the signal, if I'm afraid, it means I have to dig in and explore this fear and then maybe find a way to turn on the right or left?
I would agree with that. And that's not something that you need to do in a big decisive break. You know, I think you can kind of keep working with people that are trying to lose weight and start to produce another business. I mean, you've done that, Martine, right? Where you have more than one business. You got two or three or four businesses going at the same time. The one or two, maybe like the old ones that you can count on, but then there's the fun business that you're trying, right? That you've never done before. And even if you only make a little bit of money in that business, or even if you lose money, it's fun because you're excited about it, you know, and you're exploring a new area. It's funny because speaking of your friend at the gym, my trainer at the gym did the opposite. For years, he worked only with pro athletes. And at a really high level, you know, and then somehow he kind of burned out on that. And he started to work more with regular people like me, but in the kind of the longevity field, in kind of trying to get people to, as they got older, to keep, you know, striving and so on and so forth. And that rejuvenated him. In his business, he still keeps the same name. The old business was called Pro Camp, and that's still the name of the business, but it's more regular people now than it is pros.
So like I wrote my first book for beginners. If you want to start a business, that's how what you do at the beginning. So now I could focus on like, okay, now you make your first $1 million selling something online, let's say that way, and I will help you to go on a step further, or I will help you in a new book I will teach you what you will face when you reach this goal. Because I saw many people are making money at the same time, they're not happy, right? So in this way, I'm evolving as an author and I refocus my thoughts in a different direction, but I'm still author. That's the point mm-hmm. of your recommendation, right?
Yeah. And another way to think about something like that is maybe it's something beyond books. Maybe it's, you know, in person working with people, you know, or maybe it's some other medium other than the written word. Maybe it's video. Maybe it's who knows what, or something that we haven't even seen before. But I think that's a great way to go. Like, what is his name? There's a guy named Dan Sullivan here in America, who's a coach for entrepreneurs, helps people with their businesses. And he sort of started out working one-on-one with small to medium-sized businesses. But it has evolved for him where he works only with really high-end entrepreneurs. And like to work with him, you got to put up $100,000 a year. But that's kind of how he has evolved. And now I guess it's exciting for him to work, you know, with a smaller number of people, but for a higher price. Mm-hmm. It's just there are a lot of ways to evolve. That's for sure. Like for me, this is a small example. With my girlfriend, Diana, we are now publishing our own books. So I'm still writing them just like before. But now we're, you know, like the book I sent you, The Daily Press Field, that came in that special gift box thing. We're kind of exploring that sort of model of publishing where it's beyond just a book, that you get something, you know, that Amazon can't give you, or that in any event, it's just sort of a way of moving a little bit sideways, mm-hmm. but still being in the same field. But I certainly know what you mean about getting bored or hitting the wall. You know, that's certainly not good. We have to evolve one way or another.
We are now publishing, we just published like two days ago, a book written by Dan Pena. And we put the price on the book 5 times more than normal book in a shelf. Ah. It attracts different kind of customers. It also attracts a lot of hate comments like, hey, you're crazy, you're crazy. Normal books cost your Polish version of book cost $20 in Poland, and Dan Pena books cost $100. And that's fun for me, you know, to see how to react in these comments and still making money because people are buying this book because this book is great. So that kind of spins intrigues me and makes the game fun again. That's what you said with your self-publishing idea.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Marcin, why did you decide to do that, to price it at $100?
I said to myself, I can do it. I can charge for a book like $20, but I've never ever charged $100. Let's have a try.
You were just curious to see what would happen.
Yeah, I felt like I had to stretch.
Uh huh.
And go with different marketing ideas to promote the book.
Ah.
But the risk was quite low. In the worst scenario, I can put discount on the book and sell it, you know, for half a price or what, you know, with a 30% discount or whatever.
Ah.
It intrigued me. I've noticed it like little spark, like, hey, that's what if?
Yeah. Yeah, we actually did the same thing with the Daily Press Field where it went against my instinct. My instinct was, let's keep the price normal. But Diana and another person that we work with said, no, this is really a high level quality thing. Let's really price it much higher than we did before. And to my amazement, it worked. So I have to say I was wrong. You're right. It is kind of fun. It's a whole new psychology, isn't it, of why someone would pay $100 for a book.
I'm like Adriana, because my business partner in this project was afraid of the pricing. Like, oh man, like what are we going to with the book? It's going to be like a gold letters, you know, like we're going to put 50 bucks notes in the book. Well, no. you're gonna print nice book, nice cover with golden, you know, frames around it, and that's it. You wanna buy it? Yes. If you don't wanna buy it, no problem. And he was so I was Diana, and he was Stephen in this. And you also write a lot about, you know, being active, you know, putting your ass in the work, you know, sitting each day in front of your desk, you know, typing, writing. Do you stop? Do you need time just to stop, to break the routine and just stop?
I'm actually not from that school. I don't stop. Unless something forces me to stop. But I'm definitely a believer that when you finish one book, you should immediately go to the next. It sort of goes back to what I said before about having a practice, and that a practice is lifelong. And that, like, if we have a yoga practice or a meditation practice, we don't stop, right? We don't, you know, maybe we'll take a week or something off once in a while if we're on vacation, or, but even then, it's a lifelong commitment, you know, particularly in a creative process where creativity, I believe, is like a river. It's like a river that flows through you, and the river doesn't stop. And so why should you stop? And so I'm not a believer in taking vacations for very long, a little bit once in a while, but I start to get a little uncomfortable when I'm not working. And if I go for a long time without working, I become not very much fun to be around, you know, I start to be experiencing symptoms of anxiety and depression and that kind of thing. And once I go back to work, then I'm fine.
There's kind of guilt in you, like, hey, I just lost 10 days of not writing.
No, I just think, you know, a flower grows. You can't stop a flower from growing or an oak tree from growing. You know, a friend of mine makes this analogy. He says that a rat, there's something about the teeth in a rat, I don't know if you know this, that if they don't get worn down from chewing, the teeth grow back into the brain and kill the rat. So you've got to, if you're a rat, you got to keep chewing all the time. Like, so I'm kind of like a rat that has to keep chewing.
Because, you know, I notice when, for example, if I don't write today, I'm thinking about the idea for next post or for next book, even when I run. For example, today I went for a run, like 1 hour run, and I felt, I know the feeling of creativity coming. It's something flowing through your body, through your mind. Body is running, but at the same time, ideas coming from different different parts. So after this one, I stopped. I was, okay, three main ideas from the run. So can I say that I was actually working during this running process? Because I know that people think writing, working means like I have to be in front of the computer. For me, working means, okay, I look in the sea for 2 hours, there's nothing, but at the end, boom, something's happened.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. In fact, I would bet, Marcin, that when you finish a run, you probably go straight to your phone or your tape recorder and write down your ideas that you had right before you forget them. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I think running is a great way to do that, because it gets the effort of running puts your ego to sleep. You know, a lot of people have, and I'm one of them, I get ideas when I'm driving.
Yeah.
There's something about driving, you know, that it puts your mind, you have to focus enough, but not completely, you know, or also in the shower, I get ideas. And, you know, Einstein used to say that he got ideas in a sort of a twilight state when he was in bed, and he would try to like not wake all the way up, but sort of stay in that kind of half, you know, when the ideas were coming to him. And if he found himself waking up, he'd like go back to sleep again. So I think, I don't think you have to be sitting, you know, in front of this thing grinding constantly, you know, ideas come during the rest of the day.
Yeah. So
actually, I'll tell you another thing for me where ideas come for me is like watching movies or reading a when I'm or reading a book or listening to music, if it's something that's really good, and I sort of say to myself, boy, I wish I had done that, or I wish I could operate at that level. You know, a lot of times, like you, when you run, I'll have an idea for a new book or for something like that. So, yeah.
There's a guy, you might know him, David Goggins.
Yes. He's... Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know him personally. I know of him.
Yeah. So his mentality, like, it's like, run till you die, mm-hmm. motherfucker. That's his attitude. And even in Poland, people are saying, like, you are, like, you're like a David Goggins, because you will go and you're going to die, but you will go. I'm not a huge fan of this theory, and I wonder what think about it. Like, no matter what, I will go. I will broke my foot. I will run. I'm a huge fan of, you know, managing the energy and choosing directions where to put it. What do you think about this? Are you David Goggins in writing, Stephen?
No. I mean, I think David Goggins is one in a million, you know, or one in 10 million that, but for me, I actually try to be kind to myself, you know, and, when it gets too hard, like on a day's writing basis, when I start to get tired, I'll stop. When I start making mistakes, when I start making typos and stuff like that, I'll stop. Because I feel like the equivalent in running would be if you reach a point where you say to yourself, if I keep running, I'm going to hurt myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I've already burned out the proper muscles that I should be using. Now my body's going to start recruiting muscles in my lower back and muscles, in my groin. And next thing you know, I'm going to be hurt. So I look at it as the long game. You know, I'm playing for another 20 years, you know, so I think it's okay to go easy. You know, I remember, I don't know if you're into horses at all, Marcin, but
I know how horses look like. I ran three times in my life.
I remember being with friends who had some racehorses at the racetrack. And the trainers of the racehorses, they really don't work them very hard. You know, they take them out, they warm them up, they run a couple of, you know, around the track a few times, they do a few sprints, they maybe will train them a little bit getting into the starting gate, but they're pretty easy on the horses, really. And a lot of, as soon as they're done, you know, they soap them down, they wash them, they, you know, they're really taking care of those horses, because those thoroughbreds are fragile horses. You know, they can be hurt. And if they're hurt, they're ruined, and it's a lot of money down the drain. So I sort of thought to myself, you know, I should do the same thing with myself. You know, it means I work every day, but I'm not going to work myself to the point where I get hurt. It's just crazy.
So you just describe how David Goggins speak and work and, you know, make sports. Like, I will die at the end, but I will. Yeah, and a lot of people catch this idea of being unbeatable, unstoppable, and they discover they are stoppable.
Uh-huh, yes.
They have to manage the energy in a way, like you are a human being, you know? You are not David Goggins in everything you do.
And the other thing, at least for a writer, or for even a musician or anybody like that, is... the way the equivalent of David Goggins running through everything is us keep on working until we get the job done. You know, it might take 2 years, it might take 3 years. That's sort of the equivalent, I think. You know, I'm not going to stop short of the finish line, and I'm not going to stop when it's an incomplete job or it's not good enough, you know. But I'm also not going to write 23 hours a day and sleep one. You know, that's just crazy.
I understood that, like, when I'm taking part in the running tournaments, I knew from the very beginning, there's like no freaking chance I can win this race. There's like there's no chance, because there are pro athletes running half an hour faster than me. But I still run. So I like this analogy that you just described. Like, But still, I'm on the starting line, I'm on the finish line. I start the book, I finish the book. It took me not 3 months, but maybe half a year, but I'm done. So it's like a rabbit running with a snail, right? They both get to the finish line, but with different conditions.
Yeah. I mean, who are we really competing with? We're competing with our own selves, right? That's what who we should be competing with. What's the best I can do? You know, like you say, you're not going to beat the top marathon runners. You know, they were gifted by God with speed, you know, and then they've trained for, you know, however long since they were little kids. But running your race, I take my hat off to you. You know, you did it. You don't have to set a new record or a personal best every time. You got to went from the starting line to finish. That's a victory. That's a big victory. You know, God bless you and anybody else that does it.
And when you said when we are running, we put our ego on the side. What do you mean by that? Let's dive deeper in this topic.
I really feel this is a deep topic. And I think in writing or in any art or in running too, I think, well, maybe it's different in running. I would certainly bet that the top runners, their ego is involved.
Of course.
They are competing, you know, they do want to win. But there's a difference, at least in the arts, between, do you know who Rick Rubin is?
I love his book.
Creative Act.
One of my favorite about creative.
Yeah, he's great. In fact, I just recorded the Daily Pressfield at Rick Rubin's studio for the audiobook just this last week. Mm-hmm. But in any event, he always says, if you're doing a piece of art, piece of music or whatever, and you're attached to the outcome, it never comes out as good as if you're doing it just purely for the love of the work itself. You know, like if he's working with musicians and they're thinking, oh, this has got to be a number one hit. It's, you know, what does the audience want? Let's give the audience what they want. That never works. That's coming out of the ego. But if you're just in there to asking yourself, what do we really love? What kind of music do we want to do? Forget about the audience. You know, in fact, Rick Rubin says the audience is the last person he's concerned with. What he wants a musicians to do is what they love. And hopefully, if they love it, then people out in the real world will love it too. And that's, so that's, for me, not working out of the ego, but working out of the soul, working out of the self with a capital S, you know? And it's also a lot more like play, like when a little kid plays, you know? If these guys are in the studio making music, they should be really enjoying themselves, you know? It should be, oh, this is great. I can't, you know, let's get this even better, you know? Rather than aiming for an outcome. Mm-hmm. So it's tricky, Marcin, because ego, we do want to be striving to be the best we can be and to do the best work that we can. So we are aspirational. We do have intention, but that's different than being in the ego, you know, where you're competitive with other people. You should never be competitive, because anything that you or I might do in the arts can only be done by us. You know, nobody else is going to write the song we're going to write or write the book we're going to write. So what's the point? How can we compete with somebody else? We just can do the best we can and hope that it strikes a chord out there in the real world. And if it doesn't, we move on to the next one.
I love being a publisher because I can, you know, invite amazing people like you and talk about questions I've got. And, you know, discuss about my projects. I will give you something also to work on this interview, as you mentioned, Rick Rubin. I publish business book, a little bit of self-help book, right? But I've got an idea for a book. We moved, 3 years ago, we moved into the forest in Poland, and we spent a lot of time in forest. And when I was running, I felt like I'm not doing drugs, I'm doing forest. You know what I mean? It's like a horse playing. Probably it means a little bit different in Poland. However, don't do drugs, do forest. And I've got this idea about describing the people, the way I think about the forest, living in a forest. You know, you inhale, literally you inhale the forest, but part of me is saying like, hey, people won't gonna buy it, or so much less people gonna buy it than your next business book, because you know how to promote business books and so on. Why do you want to put like 1 or 2 or 3 months from your life typing about ideas about the forest? Even my business partner, my wife, asked me, hey, what's the point? We're gonna, you know, publish, we can publish the book, it's easy for us, we got the tools, we don't have, you know, any like nature movements around us with but still this idea is with me for like 3rd or 4th month. And even in Madeira, we live in forest, and each day when I enter the forest, I can feel the scent of eucalyptus forest. So what do you think about this? I think I know the answer, but
I'm sure you do know the answer.
Yeah.
I would say that the forest book is the one you should really concentrate on. That's really coming from your soul, you know? And that's, if we think in terms of the muse and the goddess that inspires us, she's sending you that book. And she always knows better than we do. When we say to ourselves, oh, I don't think anybody's going to buy this forest book, who cares? You know, the point is you're doing it for yourself. But the other thing is, a lot of times those books or movies or that we think nobody's going to like, they wind up really liking it a lot, you know? Like my first two books, novels, The Legend of Bagger Vance and Gates of Fire, I thought when I was writing them, nobody's going to be interested in this. They're so obscure. They're so, you know, but they turned out to be the two most popular things I ever did. So I was wrong, but I was inspired to do it, just like you in the forest. So I would say, keep doing it. It's probably the most fun, the best thing you'll ever do. Even though you don't know why you're doing it, there's a reason, and it'll become clear to you a year from now or 2 years from now.
Even if it's like,
follow like that drive.
If it's like a stage between something, right?
Yeah, there's something there that you may not be able to put your finger on now, but it's for real, and you should follow it.
You know, the two sides. The only thing that making me consider this idea is like Steven just said, Martin, do it. Other, but like, there's no other reason to do it. Like, no other reasons. No financially, no nothing. But still, I'm so in this idea. That's not, you know, I've got plenty of ideas. However, this one is in the back of my head for like months.
Yeah, you got to do it. Imagine if we had Rick Rubin here right now and we asked him, what would he say? He'd immediately say, just what I said, do it, do it, do it.
And then see what's gonna came out as a result from this, or just don't care about this. It's so simple.
Yeah.
And you said yes, like without like microsecond of.
Oh yeah, absolutely, no doubt.
So it means like
the feeling that you're experiencing that sort of tells you don't do it or don't spend so much time on it or don't work so hard on it. That's pure resistance with a capital R,
mm-hmm.
You know, and that's your own self-sabotage. And that tells me that that's what you have to do. I can see it in your face right now. You know, you have a negative thing, but that's purely resistance. And the more resistance we feel to something, the more certain we can be that we have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Polish readers love your books, many reasons, but one of the reasons is like you write in such a like short way. Like sometimes the one chapter is one page, but this page like is like so like the point. You don't need to add more to it. That's your unique way of writing, or you just decide that, okay, when you got an idea, for example, the book, Move Your Ass Where Your Heart Wants uh-huh. to Be, some readers said like, hey, this book could be wrote in one page. Why this author is, you know, typing for like hundreds of pages, and why you charge us, you know, so much money for the book? Like, no idea. My answer is like, okay, try implement this idea and you will see the result. But at the same time, it's only one idea to the book.
Well, there should only be one idea to a book, right? Or to a movie or whatever it is. But if you look at Move Your Ass to Your Where You Want to Be, you'll see that it couldn't be written in one page, that it first talks about that idea at the physical level, you know, literally moving to Madeira or wherever it is, moving your family. Then it talks about moving as a career move, that if you wanted to be an actor, you would move to Hollywood, or if you wanted to be a dancer, you'd move to London or New York or Paris. And then it keeps going on deeper and deeper levels until it gets down to like the soul level and the self level. But it's all about the idea of moving your sense of commitment to the place where the work can really come into fruition, and not being in a place where it's never going to come, whether mm-hmm. that's emotionally, psychologically, or geographically. So, 100 pages is a short book. In any event, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, so that's why people who never wrote a book are asking me, okay, I'm going to write the first book, and how many pages it has to, you know, be in typed. I'm like, I don't know. You can choose example as Ayn Rand, thousands. You can choose Stephen's way and do a book in 100 pages in a short way. So yeah. in their case, they put ego front because they think they have to write them, you know, the amount of lines or characters to make this book good, look good, like not thick, not thin. That's the case.
Yeah, people do. There's a lot. I mean, that's one of my things that I hate when I read a book, and I read like the first 12 pages and I kind of get the idea. Oh, this is about that. You know, I get it. All right. But then the next 240 pages are just basically filler. You know, they just are saying it over and over again in a different way without going any deeper into it. And I say, like that person that didn't like Move Your Ass, it should have been a shorter book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to have an agent, my first agent, and I asked him the same question. I said, how long should a book be? And he said, how long is a letter? Some letters are short, some letters are long. It's the sort of the subject matter dictates. You know, if we're writing a biography of Charlemagne or of Mussolini, it's probably going to be a pretty thick book because we're going to get into all that sort of stuff. But if we're writing a little self-help book about meditating, you know, it might be, you know, 100 pages or something like that. It all depends on the subject matter, I think.
Interesting. So it's all about putting your ego on the side, do the work, let the muse do the work, and be open for this inspiration, which is going to come from different places, different stories, and different projects, right?
Yeah. And by the way, let me say something else to you, Martin, personally. I got to validate you and praise you for the way that you have, brought in non-Polish writers and gotten, and you know, like when we met, you came all the way to America. You came all the way to Nashville, you know, and that's a great thing, you know, I give you a lot of credit for that. You know, that's real. Looking for writers that are not necessarily in Poland, that are somewhere else, but that Polish readers would like. That's a great thing. I'm really proud of you for doing that. You know, it's great. Smart business and hard work. Good idea.
A few days ago, a friend of mine asked me about this. How did you brought Stephen Pressfield to Poland and so on? I told her, I just went to USA and I asked him personally. And she said, like, look, don't use the word just. You move your ass where you're.
Yeah.
So that could be the summarization for the interview. I feel like I was talking with a friend, asking my private questions, and I'm sure this video gonna help like thousands of people all over the internet. So I've got like last question in the end. Damn, I know the answer, but I'm gonna ask the question no matter what. In the era of social media, algorithms and so on, everything changed. Like algorithm is promoting different things. I saw people who have like amazing ideas, amazing posts, amazing books, but they cannot reach, you know, to people because of the algorithm. Let's call it algorithm. We are saying that we noticed that something changed in the internet, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and so on, that they cannot reach to the audience. What they can do to reach to the real audience except just doing the job, just doing the work, just doing the book?
You know, that's a hell of a question. And I ask myself that question all the time. And I haven't figured it out for myself. You know, I haven't found the algorithm that really works for me or not enough, you know. And it even seems to be unfair in a certain way, in that certain people that have a big reach to the audience really don't have very good material. And other people that are doing great work, you know, don't have that algorithm. I sort of hate that you have to kind of play the game. You know, you have to market yourself. You have to sell yourself. You have to put yourself out there. It didn't used to be that way 20 years ago or 40 years ago or 50 years ago.
5 years ago, it was different.
Yeah. So I find myself, I have to do podcasts. I have to go out. I have to speak. I don't like it. I wish I could just be home working on new material. But unfortunately, marketing and promoting is a big part of the game for anybody these days. If you're a musician, same thing. You know, if you have a band, you have a song. Well, how do you get a song noticed these days? You know, when there are like, you know, 5,000 songs a day are being put on Spotify or whatever it is, you know? It's a shame, but everybody has to find some way of playing that game.
Even if you pay for a Facebook ads and so on, you're still, I would say, fighting with like dumb shit online like that's promoted higher. Or in a time of politics campaign, you're losing because people are looking for different kind of news and they are more attracted about this and algorithm. But at the end, we do the work.
Yeah. That's why I say, like I was saying before, having a practice is a great way to look at it. You know, we're doing our work. It's lifelong. We're going to do the best we can and try to do like Rick Rubin says, not be attached to the outcome, but do what we love and make it play as much as we can.
It will be also interesting to talk with Rick Rubin, not about his book, but how he promoted the book. Because I wrote this book like a year ago, more or less, just after I saw the first information. I heard about this book from my friend. Then I saw some information about he's doing interviews and podcasts and so on. I wonder how would he answer? Would he answer in the same way as you did? Or he would say like, okay, you have to be a super author and be a super entrepreneur and super marketer to, you know, got these two things and be super famous.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know myself. I don't know. I certainly see that he does have a pretty big presence out there in social media. And, you know, they've done documentaries about him that you see on TV. But I don't get the feeling that he's really pushing that himself. I think a lot of people are just interested in him. And people, I imagine, come to him and say, you know, could we do a film with you? Or could you know, that kind of thing. But I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Okay. So, Steven, thank you very much for your time. Another time, another interview in Madeira kind of tradition. I'm super grateful I could ask so many questions. Some of them were my questions. Some of them were questions that I represent. I bring from your Polish audience. So Thank you very much. Thank you very much for everything you do, and thank you very much for your time today as well.
Thank you, Marcin. Thanks for coming to Nashville and making me a friend. And thanks for everything you do, you know, and all the books that you're bringing out and the way you're moving ahead. And the last thing I'll say is get into the forest and keep doing that thing. Don't stop.
And please do remember, if you are coming to Europe, like anywhere in Europe, just let me know and I'll be your tour guide and foot on me. Just
it's a deal. Know. It's a deal. All right. Thanks a lot. My best to everybody, including Nina.
Nina is the best. Thank you, Stephen. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye for now.